Hey everybody, welcome to Two Pixels Off, the very first episode of our new podcast with myself, Mike Janda, and Brad Hussey. Brad, good to have you here.
It is a pleasure. Are we both a pixel? Is that what we're going with?
Yeah, that's the idea. And we're both a little off. That's also the idea. That's the idea.
Welcome to Two Pixels Off, a podcast for creative entrepreneurs.
Okay, so let's talk about that. Just jumping right in. Where did this name come from? So over the last week, Brad and I have been going back and forth on names. There's a spreadsheet that we have been sharing that has 200 something names on it. Some of them are really bad ideas from ChatGPT. Some are really bad ideas from me. And Brad was good about making it. Like when I had a bad idea, you were like, I kind of like it. I think it's okay, but I'm not really sold on it. This was his response. He's a nice guy.
So we went through
a bunch of options. And one of the things that's tough about naming is that all of this, the normal stuff that you hear is taken. Everything is taken, like Creative Spark and Spark Creative. And every version of podcast with the word creative in it is pretty much gone. So what we tried to do was substitute that word creative with other ways to say creative or design or marketing or whatever in a different wording that's more unique. And the word pixels resonates this idea of creativity or marketing or design or whatever. So this is kind of how we landed on pixels as being a little bit of a synonym to the word creative to say what we're talking about here, which is the creative industry. The other thing I would say is that it's kind of stemmed out of the idea that if a design is one pixel off, then it's wrong, then it's bad. And we track those pixels as creative people. We're looking at design and we're like scrutinizing the details. And if it's one pixel off, it's bad. Well, guess what? One pixel off is taken. There's some agency called One Pixel Off that owns the domain onepixeloff.com. And I was really bummed when I found them because we landed on that name and I was all on board on a Saturday afternoon until I found the freaking agency that already had that name. Kudos to them because it's a great name, and shout out to them on this. You can go check out their site, a little free promo for One Pixel Off Agency. Anyway, so we started digging around thinking, okay, what are we going to call this? And we went through a whole bunch of other names and landed on Two Pixels Off because there are two people in this podcast, not just one. And Two Pixels Off is just as bad as One Pixel Off. Actually, it's twice as bad as One Pixel Off. And that's kind of where we landed on. What else do you have to say about this naming process? You and I haven't really even verbally talked since we started digging into those.
We're officially starting conversation right now.
Yeah.
I found it was kind of exciting to be able to collaborate on an idea with somebody, come up with a name. Normally when I'm naming a something for a brand or, you know, an idea or a product, it's all in my own head and I don't have anybody to bounce things back and forth. And it's amazing how much bouncing that back and forth, lobbing it back and forth and not being afraid to like put a bad idea out there. It's amazing how that collaborative effort in short order, you can unearth something super interesting. So that would be a good tip there.
That is a good tip. Okay.
Brainstorm and collaborate with someone.
Just so that everybody knows how many bad ideas I had. We have a spreadsheet, has like 200 something names on it. How many of my ideas that were on that spreadsheet sucked? What percentage? What percentage do you think
sucked? Have to give you a number?
You got to give me a number. You got to give me a number. I can take it, whatever the number is.
Okay. That would be about 98%.
98. Oh, that's a brutal number.
If I do the math, that leaves you with four good ones. I'll give you more credit. I think you had about 8 to 10 good ones. So maybe like 95% bad.
It hurts. Okay. In my book, Burn Your Portfolio, I have a chapter called Brainstorms Are 90% Bad Ideas. And see? I believe it. I believe that 90% of the ideas that we throw out there are bad. But if you don't go through all those bad ideas, you never get to the good idea. And when you're naming something, you got to go through, make the big list. do every iteration you can find. As stupid as the idea seems, put it on the spreadsheet, because maybe it's going to spark that other idea later. Yep. And that's where we landed on with Two Pixels Off, and we both like it right now. Hopefully we fall deeply, madly in love with it as we do this podcast. But it was fun. It was fun having somebody to collaborate with on that.
And it sure was.
And it was fun for me to feel like I had to sell it in to someone. I kind of perceived you as the client in this naming process. And if I couldn't convince you that it was good, then is it really good? That's what I asked myself a number of times. So
I
do want to shout out the one that I really wanted to go with. And it was, what the Helvetica? That was the number. Somebody can take it. Somebody can take this name as a podcast. Yeah. What the Helvetica? Like, instead of saying what the hell as your podcast name, what the Helvetica as a substitute for that?
And that was a contender.
An echo to the craziness of the industry that we operate in, and the what the heck moments that we see. I like that name, but it didn't pass the approvals, and it's not as I think it's more memorable, but it's not as meaningful as Two Pixels Off. Doesn't have that deeper meaning.
Yeah. Well, okay. I think that we got a good name going here, and I'm pretty excited to explore what it looks like as well.
I am too. Okay. This was the 6 minute so far intro that had nothing to do with what we're going to talk about on the podcast today, our first episode. But that's just a little taste maybe of what you can hopefully expect from Brad and I every single week as we deliver podcast episodes to you. Let me tell you a little about where this podcast came from. Brad and I both have been doing content over the last couple of years in support of Wix Studio, which used to be Editor X. It's a website builder product from a no-code builder product from Wix that allows agencies and freelancers, any creative, to build custom websites complete with animation and high-level features and e-commerce and all the things you'd want without having to know code. And we've been doing content, both of us, in conjunction with Wix over the last couple years, and that's how Brad and I connected. And this is one of the outcomes of Brad and I building a relationship over the last couple years in some content collaborations. I'm most excited about this one over all the other things that we've done so far together.
Yeah, I'm very excited for this one. And yeah, and I do want to add, like, this Wix Studio is not your classic Wix legacy editor. That's something that there's a clear distinction here. Is Wix Studio is, and it's an advanced platform. It's for agencies, pro freelancers, and you're building sites for clients, and you have all the business tools. And also, if you are building more sophisticated solutions, I have somebody that I talked to just recently. He has an agency and he builds sophisticated back-end inventory management systems for his woodworking or hardwood industry clients. And he builds it all using Wix Studio, because you can code in it too if you want access to that. And so it's not, you know, a little drag and drop editor, you know, to build your own stuff like this. You could build your business on this and be fully supported by that tool.
Awesome. It is really a great tool. I wish, and you've been doing websites for a long time too. Yeah. I saw the entire evolution of the website world from my early days. I graduated school in 1996, and the early days, it was like coding directly on the server. We would telnet into the server and code directly onto the server. So to see the tools change over time, you know, 6 years into my career, Dreamweaver came out, and it was the first time you could kind of code and see the thing that you're coding real time. So that was fun, but it was fun to see these platforms start to emerge over mostly the last 15 years or so, when these builders started to become a thing. And man, it's so easy today to get into building websites than it was back in the early days. Those of us that have been doing this for a while, you have to be able to code to be able to make it happen. And now that's not the case.
It's been democratized. It's way more accessible.
It is way more accessible. Yep. But your clients still need you to create these things for them. It's not quite, some of the builders, some of the template things can, a lower end client can spin up their own little website page if they want to. But any business that's out there marketing, selling product, selling services really needs to have a web designer involved in part of their marketing process.
Yeah.
All right. Let's talk for a second about who this podcast is talking to and the types of things that we're going to talk about. So first things first, this is our focus here is on creative entrepreneurs. We're going to be talking to people who have a small agency, or they're freelancing and they want to grow into an agency, or they're freelancing and they want to stay a solo freelancer, but they want to scale on their pricing and their systems and make it the dream where they can travel the world and work from the beach and have it be systematic and not stressful and profitable for them. We're going to be talking to those people, people who are mostly in that creative entrepreneur role. On a side note, there isn't much difference between a creative entrepreneur and the same principles that apply to any entrepreneur. So if you're not a designer or marketer or SEO person or a photographer or something, you're still going to find plenty of nuggets of value inside of our podcast because a lot of these principles apply to any type of business. So we're going to be talking a lot about things like business systems, managing a business, hiring and scaling, marketing, design, sales, current trends in the business world, current trends in the creative world, things like AI and some of the hot buttons that are happening inside the industry or the world in general. We'll be talking about those things. I think we'll probably end up shouting out people who rebrand, like Eddie Bauer rebranded just a couple months ago. Those will be things that we're going to talk about. The discussion about those things will apply to you as an entrepreneur of any kind. It's going to apply. That's a little summary of who we're speaking to and the types of things that we're going to talk about. Brad, what do you have to add to that list of stuff?
Yeah, no, I wonder, there's probably a way that we can get our listeners to like write into us, you know, we'll figure out whatever that mechanism looks like. But I'm also curious to hear who is listening. Maybe, you know, do you fit that bill squarely? You know, are we explaining that clearly? Or maybe there's some, say, you know, you run a creative entrepreneur business and you're on the creator side, or you work with brands, you know, or you build sites for clients, or you do so, like, there's so many ways to skin the cat, so to speak. You know, from our industry, we know, you know, choose your target audience, choose your target market, who you're speaking to, because then it will reverberate out and attract, you know, rather than saying are for everybody. You know, it's good to focus on kind of a target, and that's going to have a reverberating effect and capture the attention of people on the outside saying, hey, can we tune in too? Like, does this work for us too? And of course it does. But whereas if you try and speak to everybody, you're speaking to nobody. Whereas if you're speaking to somebody, other people want to go, whoa, I want in on the conversation. That's the way I kind of see it too.
Okay, good. So how do you tell us what industry you work in? Well, when you make a review of our podcast and drop it into your favorite podcast platform, drop in there, hey, I'm a marketer, or hey, I own a sign company, or hey, I mow lawns, or whatever it is that you do for your business, drop that in there. Or if you're not in business and you're looking to start a business someday and you find things in our podcast interesting, drop that in there as well. We love to know who is tuning in and who we're speaking to.
Yep.
Okay, great thoughts. Thank you. All right, here is something that's going to make our podcast a little different. It is going to be value-packed. We're going to do a concerted effort to not have 1 billion conversations about fluff. Yeah. I want this to be so valuable that you're pulling out a notepad and you're taking notes, and we're going to give you actionable steps, and we're going to talk about the way to implement some of the ideas that we share in this podcast that can have a transformative effect on the business that you're trying to run. That's what I want this to be, completely different, not than every podcast, but I listen to a lot of podcasts, and I don't want fluff. I want this to be heavy, actionable, detailed content.
Yeah.
Thoughts on that, Brad?
I agree. I 100% agree. Like maybe if we establish ourselves firmly in the design and creative entrepreneurship culture where people just want to hear more, you know, conversations between people. I understand that, you know, but I think you got to earn your place in that. Whereas if someone wants to listen to us, I feel like if they've given 30 minutes, 60 minutes for an episode, you know, or they commit to listening for a few episodes, I feel like we should be having a rule of thumb where, sorry, if you hear stomping up ahead.
I do. Is that your wife? Is she mad?
She's mad. She's stomping her head. That's actually my youngest daughter. She is home from grandma's house. So whether we keep this part or we edit this part, I can
restart. No, we're keeping it, man. That's authentic. It's authentic.
It's real. Okay. What I was saying, though, was, here we go. This is where I lose my train of thought on camera.
Actionable. Actionable. You're talking about actionable content.
Yeah. If you dedicate 30 minutes of time here, you should have at least 10 times that value. 30 minutes times 10. So 300 minutes of value, however you want to measure it. If we've said one or two things, those one or two things should be at least 10 times more valuable than your time in that 30 minutes you spent with us. Sales call. You can close that deal. You can increase your price. You can get rid of that client, increase your efficiency. It has a practical, tangible value associated with it. That's to me what would make it a successful episode.
I like it. I love it. Okay. Thank you. All right. So before we dig into the topic for today, which is the best non-generic business advice that we have to share with you. And non-generic, I'm talking about this cliche stuff that you've heard 1 million times. But before we dig into that episode content, let me introduce to you Brad Hussey, and we'll give him a minute or two to introduce himself. Brad and I connected. He runs a huge community called Creative Crew, 2,770 members. I just checked before we jumped on here. So he's got a big community, very engaged, great people, lots of content in there and speakers and things. And it's a free community for anyone. So that's a great offering that he has. He also has a YouTube channel that has 21,800 subscribers on YouTube making content. On your YouTube channel, primarily it's about web design stuff, but you go into some tangents related to just creative industry, but web design seems like it's the most core of that. Okay, now that I stole just a morsel of your thunder, why don't you give us a little bit of your background so that our listeners know who you are?
Oh, that's great. Well, I appreciate the kind words. I humbly accept. yeah, I've been in this game since 2009. That's when I got into school. I went to college for interactive design. I learned all of the things from Flash, doing Flash animations, for anyone who remembers that, to, you know, database design, all the way to, you know, illustrating, SEO, business management, digital marketing. It was kind of everything. And the whole point of it was to help us find the path that we wanted to take. So some of my classmates went on to be game designers making popular games or indie games. Some of them went on to be IA UX designers, you know, some information architecture folks, you know, all the way to working at software companies to Google and whatnot. I was just kind of like a little bit different in the sense that I was like, I don't want to work for anybody. I don't want to have a boss. I want to figure out how to do this myself. And so I ended up getting a job afterwards at a studio for less than 1 year before I quit to go full-time freelancing. And so that's been over 10 years now. That's been 13 years at this point, time of this recording, that I've been self-employed, solo, building sites for clients, consulting, branding, being a creator, an educator, a brand evangelist. You know, it's kind of taken on many different forms, all in the field around a nucleus of web design, which is why it has a special place in my heart. You know, to me, that's kind of the center of it all, you know, and then it branches from there, but that's, I'm speaking from that perspective. Hence why the YouTube channel, you know, I talk about the art, business, and craft of web design. A lot of these web designers are, you know, SEO people, or maybe they're graphic designers who are building for the web. But, you know, I speak from a place of connection to the web design world or the web designer. And so I've been doing this, working with clients, working with brands, small and big, all around the world. And I've been fortunate enough to be able to do that for kind of a long go at this point. I can look back and say it's been like 13 years. That's kind of incredible. Yeah. So I'm grateful for that. And so I keep my eyes open to opportunities, and what I've learned over the years, my mistakes and my successes and wins. I like the idea of, you know, dropping down the ladder for anyone who's even just a couple of rungs behind, or many behind at this stage for me, is to help them out, show them it's like there's more than enough room at the table. And I like the idea of being helpful and to share what it is that I've learned along the way, which is why this excites me, being in another medium like this, to have the ears and the attention of folks who may or may not be behind or maybe even ahead and need to listen to a different perspective.
It's awesome. Thank you. Brad's a great content creator. He's made a lot of video content has been kind of your key kind of content.
Yeah. I should introduce you though. We should be like giving you, let me steal a little of your thunder, right?
Okay. See what you have. See if you have any thunder.
Okay. Let me see if I can steal some thunder and make your follow-up seem lame.
Okay.
I doubt it. I'm really puffing myself up here. I'd be like, you know what? I might cut your segment out, Brad, and I'll just do it myself, which is always the option. Okay. I like to introduce, you know, when I talk you up too, when I have you on my channel or in the community. Thank you. I'd be like, you got to come. Mike Jand is in the house and you're lucky to have him there. So industry veteran, agency veteran, best-selling author, you know, Burn Your Portfolio, The Psychology of Graphic Design Pricing. There's been a number of people that come across who've just tell me like, oh man, I bought that book. And that's such a helpful book for me. Mm-hmm. So I thought that's, you know, that's really cool to have that in the bag as well. But you're on Instagram, you got a huge Instagram following. We're looking at like 161,000 followers. So we're talking like a big time Instagrammer, which is awesome. Mm-hmm. And your YouTube channel has been growing a lot too. You're at 41.4K.
It just took off like the last couple months. I think there was some threshold. We should talk about this at some point. There was some threshold, like when I got to 15,000-ish followers, all of a sudden it seemed like there was a comfort level with people saying, oh, okay, I'll follow that one. I'll follow that channel. And they were more prone to hit the subscribe button. That's how I feel. My growth is distributed over a number of different videos. So, you know, I got 1,000 something followers from this one, et cetera. And it just keeps growing, which has been great. So I'm super grateful.
No, that's
because YouTube's so cool. A slog, man. YouTube's a slog.
You gotta really keep put churning in the hours.
Content. Like, yeah. It requires the effort to get the audience to start to take notice.
Yeah, that's definitely a conversation at some point here. And so with that, I mean, congratulations on that, by the way.
Thank you.
To be able to share your insights there. Agency founder, you founded and sold an agency, so being able to make an exit and sell like that, that's such a great thing to be able to have in the bag as well, that experience that comes from that. Curious to explore that sometime. And also recently, the More Creative Academy, which is your online community that provides support, guidance, and resources for creative entrepreneurs and creative businesses. And you're the mentor and that community leader. And I'm all about community. So that is a great place to check out. How did I do?
You did good. I'll just chime in just a couple little things. I love the community thing. I resisted that for years because after I sold my agency and my buyout was finished, I didn't really have to work anymore. I had made money in my agency and stuff. And I was in a place where I could kind of pick and choose what I wanted to do. And the idea of spinning up a community that was going to require me to show up every day was such a challenge. I resisted it. And then I finally did it last year around this time. I freaking loved it so much. I love it so much. I love my community members. We had a group coaching call this morning. It was so fun. I love that.
It's amazing.
So I'll give you just a couple little add-ons to my intro. I started my agency in 2002. My first client was Sony. my second, third clients were ABC Family and Warner Brothers. And it grew from there. And we did work for Google. Disney was my biggest client over our 13-year run. Everybody from HBO to Hulu to National Geographic and Fox and ABC Television and stuff. We were working with just all of those kinds of brands and stuff, doing online games and interactive websites and sometimes packaging, video game packaging, and sometimes branding projects and things. The core of my agency was digital related in the early days, because that was my core background. But over the years, we branched into strategy engagements and identity, big identity projects and things. So it was a super fun run. But at that 13-year mark where you are right now, Brad, is where I was like, man, what do I want to do with my life? This was the quarter life crisis, or wow, third life crisis that I had. And it led me to selling my agency. And then I stayed at the agency I sold to for a couple years, 2.5 years during my buyout. We had 80 employees with my agency combined with their agency. And I was one of the partners, minority partner in that agency. Of there were four partners. Two of us were minority partners that had been bought out by the bigger agency, and then two primary majority owner partners. And the four of us ran that agency, and I was over all the creative team. And in this 80-person agency, it was so fun of a little era. But I got into that, and I was like, what do I want to do now that this buyout is done? I could have stayed there, but I was like, man, I want to educate. I want to teach. I want to share content. I want to write more books. I want to do that. And that's what my life has been since 2018, when I left the agency. And that's all I do now. I make content. I do podcasts. I've been on a billion podcasts. I had my own podcast, Biz Buds, with Tom Ross for a while. Written a couple books and it's just, I love my life. I love this phase, and I love being the mentor that I wish I would have had in the early days of my business. That's my mission. That's my mission.
It's a pleasure to be I see life as this, you know, this journey, this path. We're all on these separate paths, but sometimes, oftentimes actually, you know, your road will intersect with another individual's road, and you're meant to come in and out of each other's lives. Or maybe you're in for a long period of time, and you're, you know, maybe it's like you're on a long pilgrimage, and then you're on this path and you meet up with someone, you go, hey, you want to hike with me for a bit? And maybe it's a short time, maybe it's a long time. So I see that as like, if I get to hike with you for a little bit on this journey, it's a pleasure to be here and to be able to walk with you for a bit.
I think of it as a river. We're all in this river, and it's going, we're floating down the river in our canoe. And every once in a while, you run up next to somebody who's in the river next to you, and you can talk and maybe even pull over to the side and hang out and have a fire or something. And then you're back in the river, and the river current is just carrying you. One of my most stressful times in my career is when I start paddling against the river. And I'm like, the river is trying to go take me downstream, and I'm like trying to paddle. I don't want to go down there. I'm too scared to go down there. I want to paddle upstream. And I found myself doing that, and those were the most miserable times in my career journey when I was doing that. So I view this, like you just said, as part of the river. This podcast all just kind of fell into place for us. It was not challenging to put together. It's just been synergistic.
Just flowed.
So it's been really fun. So, and we're only a half an episode in, and it's already fun. I'm excited.
It's like, it gives me energy. I'm excited. Let's do it.
Okay, so today, what we're going to talk about is the best non-generic business advice that we have to share. I have 2 points that I'm going to share. And Brad, I think you have one, or do you have two?
I've been making a list this whole time, so I'm going to have to pick. I'll pick the most non-generic of my list that I have here as I've been curating it over the last 20 minutes.
Brad, why don't you share the first non-generic business advice? And let me summarize for our listeners. We're going to experiment with a few different ways for our content to go. Today's episode, what we're going to do is we're going to give you some tips right out of the gate of, here's the principle. And then we're going to go in and we're going to expound on each of those in more detail, and then we're going to recap at the end. And so with these podcasts, what we want to do is give you something of value in the first 5-6 minutes of the podcast. So if that's all the time you have, you don't jump into the podcast and then listen to me and Brad talk about our bowl of cereal in the morning for half an hour before we start getting to something of value for you. We're going to try and give you value in the first 5 or 6 minutes. And then if you want to listen to the meaty section of it where we get into detail and checklists and action items, you can listen to that in the guts. And if you don't want to listen to the guts, but you want to just get a recap, we're going to recap everything at the end in the last 5 to 7 minutes. And you can just fast forward to the end and find the recap of the episode. So we want to give you 3 different ways that you can listen to this podcast. If it isn't the whole thing, it can be the beginning or it can be the end or whatever pieces you want to take. Okay, so for that, Brad, why don't you give us your first non-generic business advice, just the summary piece, just a taste, just a taste.
Okay, let's see how I do here. If you're doing a thing more than once, so if you do something twice or more, you have to document it and turn it into an SOP. That would be my teaser for that. And I can expand on that, but like we can dig into that.
I could expand on that too, because I believe that principle so much. Okay. If you ever do something more than once, it should be a documented SOP in your business. I love it.
Yep.
Okay. I'll give you mine. The language of business is data. You have to be tracking numbers. You have to be making decisions based on an analysis of numbers. And you have to do your best to take emotion out of your business decisions. Now, sometimes we make an emotional decision, but it should come after an analysis of the language of business, which is data. And what I've seen in so many entrepreneurs is no tracking of data at all. They're not tracking it at all. And creative entrepreneurs especially, they're just like, oh man, I hope the phone rings. I need the next project. They're just hoping. There's no tracking. And that lack of tracking creates a ton of anxiety that you can get rid of if you start tracking data. And we're going to talk about what data points are the most valuable, because I tracked everything at my agency. Okay, you got another one, Brad?
I do. Speaking of data and tracking and initially removing the emotion from certain decisions, because inherently there's no emotion in data. You know, if the language of business is data, you know, and analysis like that, it is very true. So my next non-generic valuable piece of business advice would be to, and I'm trying to make this sound non-generic and we can workshop it a little bit, but basically, I like saying go for no. Now, if I left it at that, it might sound a little platitude-y, and I don't want it to be. What I mean by go for no is consistently take repeated actions to grow your business specifically. So if it's get clients, if it's get calls, if it's send emails, if it's send partnership requests, if it's to secure more brand deals, if it's to get more clients on your retainer, whatever your objective is, do more actions that are likely to get you them to say no, because the numbers are not in your favor anyway. Conversion rates for online sales are like 1-2%. The only way you're going to secure 1-2 deals is by making 100 attempts and of those 98 fail. So, and this is, you know, there's more data to back this, but the idea of going for no is if you're sitting around and waiting for stuff to happen, it's not going to happen. Whereas if you are making consistent, concentrated efforts on a daily basis to make something happen in your business, you're going to collect a war chest of declines, of no thanks. Mm-hmm. And that's okay, because all that's doing is getting you closer to the 1 or 2 yeses that actually matter. So go for no.
I like it. It sounds super cliche and generic, but it's not. It's not. You took it.
It's the thing you do with go for no. It's less of, it's like go for no means you have to, it's an action. It's not let yes happen to you. It's no, like go out and get rejected 98 times this week.
Yeah. I love it. Okay. All right, I'll give you one more and then we'll let's extrapolate these four. So my next one is, it is not as scary as you think to start a business, to scale a business, to hire your first person, to go from person number five to person number 10. There are certain mindset shifts that apply to unlocking that. It's not as scary as you think. And one of the things that I say to people is that there are a bunch of idiots out there that have started a business with, and they have way less talent than you do. And they've scaled their business to 20, 30 people and seven figure businesses, 10 million, eight figure businesses. They've scaled to that and they're no more talented than you are. They're no more talented than you are, but they've just unlocked their tolerance to risk and their lack of fear, and that has given them opportunities that you don't have because you're scared of it. And I know what it feels like to be scared of it. I ran and hid from hiring for a couple of years before I finally started doing it. So it's not as scary as you think is my non-generic business advice. Okay, so let's start, Brad, with something more than two times as an extrapolation. Like, let's talk about this.
How that happens, how it works. Yeah. I'll give you a very relevant example that I just did yesterday. And I'm taking my own advice on this. And when I'm like sitting there and I got like a voice in my head telling me, whether it's left brain, right brain, probably, where I have, hey, Brad, you know that you've done that like eight times this week? I'm like, yeah, I know. Like, why haven't you delegated that? Why haven't you created an SOP and delegated that or automated it or used AI or whatever? Well, because I'm the best person to do it. And I'm like, you are a fool. You know you're not. You're like, what a waste of time. And if you compound that with the 18 other things you're doing today that you could not be doing, like, you'll actually get further and you'll be less stressed and you won't have that feeling at the end of the day of like, oh, work's undone. I haven't finished that. There's a million things. What am I doing? You're not building your business and working on it. Here's a platitude, you know, work on your business, not in it. But the point of that, underneath that platitude, that kind of generic advice is, you know, like, you should be creating, you should be steering the ship, not like rowing the paddle. You know, you need other people to row the paddles for you. So this, if you do it twice, that means it's a repetitive, and that means it needs to be created an SOP so that with the SOP, you don't do it yourself, so that you either delegate it or automate it. And so in this example, here's an example. In the community I'm building, the Creative Crew, we do guest expert sessions, webinars, you know, recorded video content. And after that, so we do these regularly, I record it. And so what I've been doing myself is downloading the recording, putting it in the video editor, chopping off the ums and ahs, shortening it, getting rid of the beginning and the end, highlighting, putting the bumper, cleaning it up, blah, 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 blah. You get the whole thing. There's a lot of stuff that happens. It's about an hour of effort per video. And then I upload it, I transcribe it, I do a summary with AI, I create all these actions, resources, I create social posts, literally a whole thing. And I've been doing that in my own head and just mousing around and clicking and making that happen. And I realized after doing this about 15 times, so it's about 15 to 20 hours of effort and stress, that I'm like I'm paying somebody. I have a staff member or a subcontractor who regularly works with me to ease the load when it comes to my community. And I'm like, I'm paying this person and I'm doing this person a disservice by stealing their work. And I'm paying for them to just be like, sorry, Brad, you're doing my work for me. So I took my own advice. I recorded a how-to tutorial video walking through the exact process the way I like doing it. And then I created step-by-step instructions. But I also said, this is the way I do it. The point here is my objective is this. I want it to look like this at the end of the day. Here's the way I do it. If you have a better way, do it better. And then tell me about it and we'll update this SOP. So that now means when I record a session with a guest or myself, I can click end session and go do other things like get more deals, build more business, create more content instead of burying myself in busy work that somebody else can do, that gets paid to do, that likes to do, and then I can get further ahead. That's what I would do.
It's really good. Okay, so I got a couple of actionable things on that. This piece of advice was one of the biggest game-changing moments in my early business. It was just me grinding out my business, and then I read the book, The E-Myth Revisited, Michael Gerber, and one of the quotes that just stuck with me, I've shared it a bunch of times, systems run the business, people run the systems. That's how a business is made. People run the systems. And I was like, "Reek, I have no systems. I'm just doing this all in my head." And so I took that quote to heart and I started documenting everything that I did. And then I started hiring people to do chunks of the system. And that had this massive transformative effect on my business. Now, I've coached people through creation of systems. And a lot of people say to me, "I just don't have the time to document this stuff. It takes forever to document it." One of the things that you did, Brad, that I want to highlight is do it once with a Loom recording happening while you're doing it and talk while you do it. And then you don't take the SOP points out of it. You just give the video to your person that you're going to delegate this to, and you say, "Here's my video, turn this into an SOP that we can use in our business." I have shared that advice with people. I tell them oftentimes if they're going to have an employee in-house, that the first day or first 2 days or 3 days that employee works there and you don't have any SOPs for them to work off of, you just sit there and tell them, "Okay, one of the things we do at my agency is we build websites. Now get an SOP out of me." And they start saying to you, "Okay, well, tell me what you do first for a website." "Oh, well, I check the domain. We have to register a domain, or we have to do a discovery call with the client." "Okay, what do you ask on the discovery call?" And you teach your person to extract the SOP out of your brain and into some kind of tangible document. It doesn't have to be something that you do on Sunday afternoon. It can be the first task of your first employee that you hire and say, "Let's make an SOP together. Your job is to get all the details out of me because you're going to have to run this SOP from now on."
That's amazing. That's a brilliant. And that's what I'm going to do for the next one is, so I made the inefficient maybe not mistake, because I learned from it now, I won't do it again, but I did the inefficiency of, I recorded the video, I spoke it out loud, I did that very well, but then I listened back to the video and I did the instructions and I wrote them out and almost transcribed the step by step. What I should have done, what I'll do for the next one, which inevitably there will be, is, hey, here's the video, how I walk through it, I've stated my objective, this is how I get to the objective, I want you to create the standard operating procedure to achieve the objective in the most efficient way that works with your workflow, that is maybe even better than what I've done it, so that we can have a standardized document to repeat.
Yeah, super good. It works. You cannot go to McDonald's and have everybody operating willy-nilly making hamburgers however they want to make hamburgers. It isn't that way. Business of any reputable size has documented systems. And if you want to have a business of reputable size, then you got to have documented systems too. Stop running from it. Create SOPs for everything that happens in your business. It's going to make your life easier and it's going to make your employees' lives easier as well. I love the idea of, "Hey, employee, here is the SOP on how we make the car at our company. Now you follow the SOP, and anytime you have a question about the SOP, you're not sure how to do a task, then come see me. Come ask me a question about that task, and then I'll add my answer to the SOP so that nobody else ever has to ask it ever again in the future of that SOP. So you're just always just tweaking and updating these SOPs. I did that for years and years at my agency. And what you create is a systematically run business that operates in an efficient way and a predictable way so that the client knows exactly whether Brad's working on it or Mike or Sally or Joan or whoever, it is going to be done the way that the business does it.
And it would make you, correct me if I'm wrong here, or feel free to add a bit to it. It makes, you probably even need it to sell your business. You need, here's the instruction manual.
Yeah, you do need it. I do want to do an episode about building to sell and what that looks like. How do you build a sellable business? Because it is one of the things, one of the reasons that somebody's going to buy your business. What was the big value? They talk about it with Henry Ford. What was the thing that he invented? It wasn't the freaking automobile. It was the assembly line that was the thing that changed the world that Henry Ford invented. It wasn't the automobile. Yeah. Other people were starting to build automobiles and stuff, but Henry Ford was the one who created the assembly line system that got replicated in every type of business possible since its inception.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it definitely has massive, massive value. Yeah. Okay. We could do a whole episode on that. And we're going to talk about processes a lot more. Let's talk next about data tracking, making decisions about data. This was my non-generic business advice. This came out of the E-Myth also. If you haven't read the E-Myth, man, I recommend this book all the time. But if you haven't read the E-Myth Revisited by Michael Gerber, read that book. It's so good. He talks about having systems. Obviously, we just talked about that. But one of the things he talks about is having an information system. And this is a quote from the book. In short, the information system could tell you the things you need to know, the things you don't know now. It tells you when and why you need to change. Without it, you might as well put on a blindfold, have someone turn you around three times, and set out with a dart in your hand, waiting for a signal from the heavens to throw it. Not a very promising game, but one it seems most people in small businesses are determined to play. That's the quote from Michael Gerber. And that is the way that so many people, not just creative entrepreneurs, but so many entrepreneurs just run their business with no knowledge of the numbers behind what makes their business churn. Now, I'm going to read another thing for you here. And I put this in a little presentation that I have done a couple of times. This is the way that big companies talk. When I'm talking about data, this is Google's earnings from a few years ago. Google's earnings report, when they are a publicly traded company and they have to release their earnings to the shareholders. Google says, this was from an article, the company reported profit of $14.21 per share, or $9.9 billion during the quarter, nearly triple what it made last year when it paid a $5.1 billion European Commission fine. Facebook earnings sounds like this. Analysts are looking for a monthly active users of 2.41 billion, up 8% year over year, according to FactSet. Facebook reported revenue of $13.23 billion during last year's second quarter, leading to diluted earnings of $1.74 per share. It then reported 2.23 billion monthly active users. This, look at the detail in this. It's $1.74 per share. It's $2.23 billion, $13.23 billion. They're getting into the decimal points. And so many entrepreneurs that aren't playing the information game or the data game, they're just out there saying, I don't know, I got a couple projects going. How's your quarter going? Yeah, it's going good. We're really busy. We're really busy. This is how they talk and they analyze their business. Oh, how'd last year go? Oh, I don't know. It was busy. It was a busy year. It was good.
It was a good year.
So you can't get to any notable size of business without looking at the data. I did this before we got on this call. I was like, I gotta know. I wonder how many followers or how many community members Creative Crew has. So I looked it up and it was 2,770. I knew that number. It wasn't 2,771. Maybe it is now that somebody's listening to this, but 2,770. I knew that your YouTube channel was 21,800. And I think it's like 21,830 in one of the views that I saw where it gives me an expanded number. Anyway, the attention to detail of the data is so important in business.
Yep.
I took this to heart. Actually, Brad, you have anything you want to say about that before I tell the most important data that I tracked in my business?
Ooh, I like that. A little cliffhanger. It's like before you get that.
A little cliffhanger.
Yeah.
Stay listening.
Stay listening.
Because here we go.
Yeah, up next.
Yeah.
Janda reveals the secret to understanding the language of data in business.
It's coming. It's coming.
We have a little zinger in there. you're right. And if, understanding, first of all, that like businesses... the language of business is data, and we translate that, and we're humans, and we say things like, oh, business is good, I feel really good, and in this purpose, and y'all with all these flighty things and terms, and that's the way that we communicate because we're all like soft and fluffy, you know, and we are human. Business isn't. Business is literally like a form of trade, of value and exchange, and you could be profitable business, you could be losing money, and you could be eventually... I like to say that business, like we need oxygen to survive. We breathe oxygen. Business breathes, so to speak, revenue, and it needs revenue to live. And you can run on a little bit of revenue, and then once the revenue goes down to flat, it's ticking, and then once you start going down into the red, it's like you're running on oxygen. You'll asphyxiate, however metaphor you want to tie that into business. And then you'll close up because it needs, it's data, it's business, it's numbers, it's revenue, profit and loss. It speaks in that language. And then you can also use that to translate to your human activities, like the creative crew you mentioned, the members that we have. You know, I am looking at a chart here, and for the last 3 months, we've increased the monthly active members. And I should do the percentages on this later afterwards, but it looks to me about 100 to 200% per month we've been growing. Mm-hmm. And I go, why? Because I've actively made, you know, going for no, I reach out regularly to influencers, creators, agency owners, people who are influential in the design and web design space, and ask if they can do a workshop or an interview in my community that they haven't heard of. Mm-hmm. And for the ones who say yes, there's many who just ignore me, who's this dude randomly DMing me.
Yeah.
They come on, they bring their audience, and these concentrated efforts of going for no shows me in the data that that's working. If I do that for 12 months straight and get better and better and better guests, by this time next year, we'll be looking at a significantly larger community, which brings more opportunities, more value to me, more value to our brand partner, Wix Studio, more value to the members because they're getting big names coming in, doing talks for free. So that's how, you know, I understand the language of business here. It's data. That number's going up and to the right. Why is that happening? Because of my human efforts of saying, hey, I love your work. I saw that reel you did. It's so great. And I'd love to have your insights on my show. What do you think? You know?
Yeah.
I speak human so that the business can speak business.
It's perfect. And it's a perfect example because the data, when you look at the data point and you ask your question, why did it do that? Why did it go up? Why did it go down? Why did it stay flat? These are the questions you ask yourself about any data point. Why did I have more profit last year than the year before? Why did I have less profit last year than the year before? Why has my profit been flat for the last 3 years? Any answer of any of those scenarios is going to lead you to changing your business for the better. Any of those. Because even if it's going up, you can say, oh, why did it go up? You analyze it, you see why it went up, and then you say, I need to do more of that activity that was making it go up. And then obviously if it's flat or down, it leads you to making pivot changes. But if you don't track the data and look at it, you don't know. So that was a great example, Brad, of looking at a data point. And then the very first thing you said is, why is it going up by 100% month over month in our active user base?
Yep.
Okay.
So now revealing your next follow-up to
here's the why big reveal. Here's the big reveal. I'm going to drum roll myself.
Nice.
The the big reveal. I tracked everything at my agency. I told you I read the E-Myth, and I was like, okay, I pulled out a spreadsheet and I tracked freaking everything from that day forward. In fact, after I hired an office manager, I went and had her go backwards and track things from the beginning. So she went and found all my invoices and projects back to the very start of freelancing. So I have all my data from 2002 on until I sold my business. I tracked things like how much revenue did we have per month? How much did we cost our expenses per month? How much profit or loss did we make per month? How many proposals did we submit? What was the average cost per proposal? How many proposals were greenlit? What was the average cost per proposal that received a green light? How many invoices did we send? What was the average cost per invoice? How much money are we waiting to collect in receivables? How much money is overdue for payment? How many man hours did it take to complete our projects this month? How many did we cost per production hour? How much did we cost per production hour? Our hourly burn rate. How much did each employee cost per hour per day? How much money is in the account at the end of each month in each of our business accounts? How many days before the first of the month did we have enough money to greenlit to cover the costs of that month? How many working projects do we have that have yet to be invoiced? Who were our first, second, and third largest clients in the month? How much did we spend on advertising this month? What were our payroll costs this month? How much were our overhead costs, excluding payroll? When did employees receive raises, and how much did that amount to? This was the bulk batch of the money, or of the numbers, that I tracked every single month for 13 years of running my agency. Now let me tell you the ones that were the most important of all of those. I tracked them all, and I love all those numbers, and I have a spreadsheet that has all those numbers for years and years of time on a monthly basis. The numbers that were the most valuable, the most important, was invoice, the amount invoiced versus the amount of expense that we had in a given month. So I knew every single month if we invoiced $100,000 and our agency cost $70,000, I had a $30,000 profit and loss of that month. And then the next month, if we cost $150,000 or we invoiced $150,000 and we cost $100,000, I knew we had $50,000 of profit in that month. I tracked that, and I started to see the trend of when our project load got bigger and when it got smaller every single year, year over year. And I knew when my slow times were. I knew when we were going to have our biggest month. It was always going to be in a certain batch of months every year. It was like July or August. 9 times out of 10 in my agency, one of those months was going to be the biggest month of the entire year. And that was a trend that happened over time, over and over again. So invoiced, amount invoiced versus amount of expense on a monthly basis. The next one that I recommend is the number of proposals, or the numbers of opportunities that you tried to win, that you had submitted a proposal for. So opportunity comes in, you qualify it, you submit a proposal for it, versus the number of proposals approved. So how many at-bats did you have versus how many did you hit and win? And I tracked that over years. And you look at things like, oh, look, you see trends like, oh, wow, every year March is the lowest amount of opportunities. But by April or May, that's our highest amount of opportunities. And then when March comes around the next year, you know that March is trending to be your lowest amount of opportunities, your lowest number of proposals, but May is always your highest. And then you stop panicking in March because the data tells you, you don't have to worry in March. It's always slow in March. It's been slow for 5 years in March, and for 5 years, May has been big. So don't panic in March when it gets slow again. This is how the data tells you the right story for your business. The next one, average price per proposal. So if you submitted 3 proposals and they were all, one was 5,000, one was 7,000, and one was 6,000, then your average price of those 3 proposals was $6,000. That's the average number and you need to know that number. I found that to be a very valuable number. And I watched that number get bigger and bigger over time at my agency. In the early days, a big project for me was $5,000. In the later days, a normal average size project was like $30,000 or $50,000 because I could see it scaling up over time. The final one is the number of sales efforts that you make. So how many people did you reach out to each month? And I go into super detail on this in some of my courses and content, so I won't go into that here. But just know that your opportunities come as a byproduct of your efforts in sales. And if you're reaching out to zero people every month, or going to zero networking events every month, or asking for zero referrals every month, then the output of that zero effort is gonna be zero opportunities. So you start tracking your efforts in reaching out to people, reaching out to clients, asking for new projects, asking for referrals, going to a networking event. You track those efforts, and then you look at the opportunities that come on the back end of those efforts. You can't control the opportunities, but you can control your effort to find opportunities, and it is a cause and effect reaction. If you do the efforts that generate opportunities, you will have opportunities that come as a byproduct. So those were the most important numbers that I tracked at my agency. Brad, you jotted down a couple of things. What thoughts do you have on
that? Yeah,
on
notes. I got notes up the wazoo today, which is like...
It's a wazoo day.
It's a wazoo of notes.
The wazoo podcast would have been a good one.
That would have been on the list. That would have been on my 98% bad idea.
I was going to say, is that a 98% bad?
That would have been on the chopping block name. Right quick.
Highly memorable.
But it's good. You got to go for no, right? Because otherwise we had an unremarkable name because you didn't go for no. So this is great. So because it ties so well into my next non-generic business advice.
Oh, I'm going to throw you a curveball.
Okay.
I'm ready. Your next non-generic. We have two left, one from me and one from you. And we're going to reconvene for episode number two on those non-generic business advice that you need to follow. And for today, we're going to leave you with this episode in the Two Pixels Off podcast. Is that okay with you, Brad?
That's brilliant. I'll leave this notepad open to this page for the next episode, because I got something to say about what you just finished on with those four metrics that you, or those three metrics that you use, those formulas. I got some stuff to say, and it ties in really nicely with my going for no.
Okay, so are we going to leave people on a cliffhanger then, just even to getting your feedback on those key points?
Okay, you know what? I can give a little bit of feedback on that, and then we can dig into it, into the meat of it on my second point. I think it's brilliant because it's the language of business. And when you know these numbers, so you have your invoiced versus expenses, you have your opportunities, your proposals versus what you've won, and you have your price per proposal on average versus the number of sales efforts. Let's assume you make no efforts, then obviously all these are going to be zero. You might get a stray flying in from a referral from the one or two clients you've worked with. You might get a stray occasionally, but you can't control what comes in regardless. But if you're making no efforts, nothing's coming in. So like if you know your average price per proposal is, let's just call it $12,000, and you have your $12,000 average price per proposal, and you make, let's say, 20 sales efforts per month, but you only close 5%.
Mm-hmm.
That's one. If I'm doing my math right. So that's one times an average of 12,000. So you can know that with your 20 sales efforts that month, based on the other metrics of price per proposal and the number of sales efforts, you'll make about 12,000 that month. What if you double your sales efforts? What if you increased your rate by 50%? How can you increase your rate in an ethical way that adds more value to the client so that your average proposal is 21,000 or even 17,000? And then you have 40 sales efforts with a close rate of 8%, You're speaking the language of business now. And then you go, now instead of 12,000 in the month, we're making 17,000 or we're making 21,000 on average. And we can pull these levers and push these and push that. It's a bunch of knobs and dials. And then you can say, I think we're in the green or in the black this month. Yeah. I think we can make this work.
Or I think I'm going to scale. I think I'm going to hire somebody to push this lever of sales and go find that, because I know what my average size is. And I know that if I want to bill $1 million in a year, then I need to have 10 closed opportunities per month, which based on your 5% thing would mean 200 sales efforts per month. And then it's kicking out the 10 closed opportunities at the average price that you're targeting. This is how business works. And this is why the data numbers that you track lead you to understand what you're supposed to be doing in your business. How do you scale it? How do you change it? How do you fix the profitability? How do you get more opportunities? You can see it all once you just start tracking some of these numbers. Now, the numbers you used, Brad, were just the ones that I shared right there. There are a whole bunch of other numbers that I didn't put in my list of most important numbers that also tell you stories about your business and your expenses and things. And all of it is to the benefit of you scaling your business. And maybe not scaling in employees, but maybe scaling in your price and your profit so that you're making the money finally that you want to be making in the business that you've slaved over for so long.
Yep.
Okay. Good. All right. Thank you, Brad. Let's wrap up today with just let's tennis match a few quick key takeaways on these first two principles, and then we'll reconvene for the second two principles in next week's podcast. What do you got on recap number one?
Recap number one for me is absolutely speaking the language of business, which is numbers and data. If you can learn that language, then you could start speaking it and translating it into human activities. These are the numbers of the business. Why is this working? That why is what translates it to human. I need to go to more conferences. I need to make more of those efforts. I need to reach out and DM more. I need to do this effort more, because that translated back into business language is profit versus loss.
Awesome. Okay, I'm going to give you, since you did a comment on my data tracking point, I'm going to go to steal your SOP point. If you do anything in your business more than one time, you should be documenting it and turning it into an SOP. And that doesn't mean you have to be the one typing out the task list. It can be the person you're hiring into your business to do that task can be the one interviewing you and sucking the SOP out of you verbally through a Zoom call or in a conference room meeting or something. Yep. Okay, what next one do you got? Another one?
Yep, I do. It's actually hard. It goes back to the very beginning of our conversation and even the genesis of this, the name of this podcast, which is bounce ideas off of another person. If you have creative ideas or thoughts, business ideas, product idea, service idea, pricing, any of it, any idea that you're going to just like bounce around in your own head, it's terribly inefficient to do it by yourself. And you don't know if it's good. You don't know if it's bad. You don't know if it's the joke I've been making here, the 95% bad ideas that we had for the podcast names.
Yeah.
You don't know if it's in that realm or not. And you're coming out with an unremarkable action on your bad idea. Whereas if you spitball back and forth and you just be like, listen, all the bad ideas laid out, we can make fun of each other afterwards. Let's do it. Because then it's amazing what happens. There's this creative spark, this strange thing that happens, even just over DMs, which is what we were doing, that created something where you're like, wow, it's almost like it takes on a third person almost, you know, like this is a strange thing to say, but I'll try to tie it in here. Barbershop quartets, you know, singers, the four singers.
I do. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I used to be in a barbershop quartet many, many, many years ago.
I think you told me this once. And every once in a while, Brad's sporting a mustache that is totally barbershop quartet mustache.
It's growing back out for totally baseball season, by the way. I'm working on it right now. It'll be here in a month or two. So the barbershop quartet, if your harmony is perfect and you get your four-part harmony perfect, there's four guys singing. But if you get it perfectly, there's a fifth voice. They call it the ghost voice, or they call it the spirit voice, or whatever name you want to put it. There's just a phantom voice. It's an overtone that's generated from the four perfectly tuned voices. That if you listen, you can go, where is that coming from? And it's like when you're all in harmony, something gets added that wasn't there, that isn't physically present. And so when you're bouncing ideas and brainstorming creative ideas off of one another, it's like you get an extra something, you know, that phantom idea that comes out where you're like, wait, where did that come from?
I love it. Okay, I've got two things to say. Number one, shout out to Bone Thugs and Harmony. You ever listen to Bone Thugs and Harmony? It's so good. It's so good. They came on when I was at the gym. Bone Thugs and Harmony, shout out to the awesome music that they made back in the day, speaking of harmony. Okay, yep. Sorry, that was a massive tangent side comment, twister. But yeah. It's applicable because of it's fresh in my head.
Yeah.
The thing going back to what you're saying of bouncing things off of somebody in that first initial conversation we had and the spreadsheet and the DMs, I loved one of those names. And I wanted that name. What the Helvetica? I wanted that name to be the one. But if I cannot sell it in to the other stakeholders in the thing, the other people who care about the thing, then was it really the best idea? Even though I loved it and I wanted it to be the best idea, if I can't sell it in, then I have to question my idea. And what I see a lot in people, especially creative people, they can get so hung up on, this is it. This is the logo. You should pick this logo. You should pick this design. You should do this way. They get so hung up on that. But if you can't sell it in and convince your client that that's the best way, is it really the best way? You got to question your own, sometimes your own bias on believing the thing and rely on the fact that you have a job to sell it into the people. And I couldn't do that with What the Helvetica. I mocked that thing up. I made it look so freaking good in the mock-ups of this brand. I wanted it to be the name, but in the end, it wasn't the name. And it wasn't the right name. I can admit that now a few days post What the Helvetica passion that I had. I can admit it wasn't the right name. And we landed on what is the right name with our podcast. So that's just a little nugget to what you were talking about there, Brad. You got to be able to sell it in or otherwise it's one of the bad ideas.
Yep.
Or at least just an okay idea.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, this was super, super fun. Brad and I are never going to have trouble filling podcast time. Hopefully everybody got some value out of today's podcast. A couple of shout outs to where you can find out more information about the podcast, 2pixelsoff.com. If you go to 2pixelsoff.com, you can find info about the podcast, sometimes upcoming topics and guests and things on that page. At the time of recording this, we haven't built that page yet. We're a little ahead on recording and a little not ready for marketing yet, but that will be the destination. If you use a hashtag, use the hashtag 2pixelsoff, either the number 2 or TWO, to shout out the podcast. And if you want to learn more about Brad Hussey, where can people find you, Brad?
You can go to creativecrewcommunity.com. That'll take you to my community. Or if you just want to reach out on social, I'm at Brad Hussey. So that's Instagram, Twitter, X, at Brad Hussey.
Hussey.
Correct.
Which you'll probably see in the show notes of here. And if you want to reach out to me, I am at Morejanda, Morejanda, like panda with a J. I love hearing from people in the DMs. And you can check out my site, michaeljanda.com, where I have all the other stuff I'm involved in and other offerings that I have are all kind of listed there. Okay, that is the crux of it. It was super fun. Thank you, Brad. I loved podcasting with you for episode number 1. This is going to be a fun endeavor.
I agree. This is going to be a ton of fun.